You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. California made sports history this month when Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill that would let college athletes make money to be able to cash in on the $14 billion college sports industry. This landmark Fair Pay to Play Act opens the door for the very first time for athletes to be paid for their likeness, their name, image, and to sign endorsement deals. Now a Michigan senator is preparing a bill that would open that same door to college athletes in this state. With us now, Democratic State Senator Adam Ollier. His district includes Detroit, Grosse Pointe, Hamtramck, Harper Woods, and Highland Park. Senator, it's good to have you on Stateside.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So you've been working on this for a while now. Why is that? Why is this important?
I was a two-sport college athlete. I played football as a decathlete, and I'm also Muscogee Creek. And so Monday was Indigenous Peoples Day. And the reason that I bring that up is because Jim Thorpe was kind of the first person on record that lost his Olympic gold medal because of playing semi-pro baseball, which is just room and board. So we've been having this issue where athletes are being held to this amateur standard for, you know, more than a century, that doesn't really exist, that only benefits other people but always hurts athletes.
That is a great example about Jim Thorpe because, boy, that's one that's easily forgotten, but it shouldn't be because that was a terrible, terrible turn, wasn't it?
Yeah, he got his gold medal back in 1972, almost a decade and a half after he passed. So when people talk about the sanctity of the game, they think about these, you know, amateur sports and they're like, oh, you know, it's this thing, but it's not. I mean, Steve Prefontaine had the same issue in the 70s when the AAU, the Amateur Athletic Union, wouldn't let him participate in events in Europe because they wanted him to go to their events where they make money. You know, I played college football and I played at Cornell, so it's not like I played at Michigan or Notre Dame or a place where people were going to, you know, fill the stadium. But I didn't have the same ability as my colleagues, my other friends, to work and do those kind of things. This is not about the endorsement deal that a Denard Robinson makes at the University of Michigan. This is about the girls volleyball player who can't work at the chiropractors, who can't do the things that all of her other colleagues do from an internship standpoint, from a work life, that they miss out because the NCAA has these insane rules.
So tell us about what your work. I know you're working on details of your bill, but what can you share with us?
So what we're doing is we're going in a different way. So California made a regulation based on higher ed. We can't do that. Higher ed university in Michigan is separated in our constitution.
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is creating kind of a right to privacy. So saying that you have this right, for lack of a better term, for your economic freedom. So you have the ability and a right to earn what you can earn, and it can't be abridged by someone just because you want to play a sport. The best example of this kind of coming up was there was a backup kicker at the University of Central Florida. So if you're a sports fan, you know that you can probably name one or two, maybe three professional kickers. You can't name any college kickers unless your team just missed a kick to lose a game. And no one can name a single backup kicker. So this backup kicker lost his eligibility at the University of Central Florida because he had a YouTube page where he didn't talk about football but was doing interesting content like, you know, every other millennial these days, making money off of being funny or their value. And that took his eligibility. So it's not even being paid to play sports. It's about your ability to have intellectual property and think about things. You can't write music. You can't write stories. They couldn't even be a reporter and get paid for that. They couldn't get an internship working on your show because you might have just gave it to them because they were a good athlete.
So you want to open the door for them.
I want to ensure that they are protected. I mean, we're talking about 12 through 21-year-olds who are so limited. And I talk about 12-year-olds because when I played football and I started playing football when I was 12, it was not the complex environment that it is today. They were just starting to rate high school freshmen and sophomore. Now 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds are getting recruited to play college sports. Nick Saban is going and knocking on 11-year-old doors and saying, hey, I think you might be great at Alabama in 7 years. We don't know if that kid is going to grow. We don't know what any of those things look like. But that's what college recruiting has become. And an entire industry has been built around it, of, you know, these elite camps. So you're playing in three leagues, a travel, a competitive, in not just football and basketball, but in volleyball and gymnastics, in all these things that are never going to produce revenue that you can't be supported for, right? So it's made it so that only wealthy kids can really contribute or play in all these things unless the team itself is able to fundraise in a way that a lot of people can't, right? So you're especially in women's sports that this is a problem.
So this really does. And there have been a lot of think pieces, actually, since the California bill became law, looking at what this could mean for the ones who are not in the spotlight. You know, we've got all that attention paid to men's football and basketball. Mm-hmm. And when you think about other athletes and sports that women are in, college might be their only chance to make a little money with a likeness or with an endorsement.
And much of it is opportunity, right? So when I was in college and playing college sports, the NCAA had this marketing campaign saying that 90% of our athletes go pro in something else. Well, in college and in high school, they're limited from being able to do those things, right? So imagine that you want to be a broadcast journalist and you are the number one high school football player in Killeen, Texas. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to let you be on their show. You know, imagine you are the number one diver at, you know, Albion, and you want to get into the news, and the news director at that station watches diving or is like, oh, hey, I saw you at the thing. I'd love to give you a shot to do nights or weekends or to do this radio show. They can't do that right now. And what I'm suggesting would allow them to do that. So it's not just the monetary benefits that these students are missing out on. It's the same things that every other student is able to do, right? So if I got a full scholarship to do drama at Yale, the Yale Drama School, I could also go be in the Fast and Furious and make $1 million. You know, if I got a full scholarship at Babson, which is an entrepreneur school, I could also go get from an alumni the venture capital to start my business. But today, you know, someone who rows crew, someone who plays golf, could not get a internship or a scholarship or some of those other opportunities for programs because people say, oh, well, they're only getting that because they're an athlete, when other students do it. I mean, DTE hires people and says, hey, we're going to pay for your 4 years of undergrad and 2 years in your master's, and we'll give you a summer job the whole time. They couldn't do that to an athlete because maybe they're only doing that because they're good at sports. And that's not just football. That's volleyball. That's women's field hockey. That's the whole gambit of sports.
And to be very, very clear, certainly California's bill is like this, and it certainly seems as though the bill that you're working on, you're not saying schools are going to be having to look for money to pay. This opens the opportunity for the student athlete to be able to earn some money.
That's 100% correct. This does not say, and I don't think it would be the case that any university would have to pay these students.
Sure.
It just gives them the economic freedom and the ability to make use of their name, likeness, and effort. No longer are we going to be telling students that they need to sacrifice to play sports.
Have you gotten any Republicans to buy into this as you talk this up in Lansing?
You know, I've had a number of very good conversations with my colleagues. When you start talking about economic freedom and being able to earn and free markets, I think they're generally supportive. You know, I've had some conversations with the Mackinac Policy Institute and everybody who I can talk to about this issue. This is not a partisan issue. This is an issue of, do people have the right to earn what they can based on their own hard work and sacrifice?
And what about, have you had any conversations with any of our universities, particularly our big two universities?
I'll say that they are very concerned about their eligibility. NCAA has not been a nice entity to universities, to those folks. I mean, the universities are very concerned about compliance and any potential punitive action. So they have been very unwilling to talk about these things on the record. And you know, rightfully so, because the NCAA has really been doing this, has been running this like a racket, and that's how all amateur sports have been done. They have a monopoly over who can play, and they set the rules as they see fit.
Senator, what are you saying to the NCAA with this bill that you're putting together?
I'm saying that they don't have a right or a, you know, standing to regulate what student athletes can be doing outside of sports, because we're not talking about what they're regulating in the confines of them playing sports. We're talking about them regulating what they can do with their time, with their background. I mean, you look at someone who plays, you know, plays volleyball. They couldn't be a jazz pianist and make money playing jazz at night. That's got nothing to do with sports. That's an incredible overreach of the NCAA saying, hey, we're going to regulate every component of your life, every moment, every second, what your parents do, where you're going to move, where you're going to live. This is the first step towards us saying that if student athletes are students first, they should be regulated the same way students are. And I think that's an opportunity for us to do this, because my bill doesn't just affect the NCAA. it does for all amateur sports. So your Michigan High School Athletic Sports, your AAU, your Pop Warner, your PAL League, all of these leagues that run amateur sports in the state saying you can regulate sports. You can't regulate how people earn or spend their money.
And in the last few moments, Senator, what's your timetable? When do you think you're going to be introducing this bill?
I'm hoping to do it by the end of the month. We're still going back and forth with the drafters on some of the details. If it's not by the end of the month, it'll be early November.
Democratic State Senator Adam Ollier, 2nd District in Wayne County. We'll keep an eye on that bill. Thank you for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
With us now is our resident NCAA expert, John U. Bacon. John, we just heard Senator Ollier list off some pretty startling examples of what student athletes are forbidden to do outside of sports. A volleyball player who can't make money as a jazz pianist, and an athlete who wants to, let's say, intern on stateside, but can't do it because we might have given them the internship because they're a good athlete. Are the NCAA's rules that onerous?
They are that onerous. They're even dumber than that, actually. Take, for example, Drew Henson, Michigan's old quarterback, who was an amateur football player, according to the NCAA, during his time at Michigan, while signing a contract for $18 million to play baseball in the Yankees organization. So he is an uber-pro baseball player, but still somehow an amateur football player, and yet the woman in question playing volleyball, of course, cannot make any money as a concert pianist. So please explain how these things work. It cannot be explained or defended.
So those are valid examples. What other examples come to mind of the way that athletes are handcuffed when it comes to making any money?
Well, and it's not even making money. It's doing things like being an intern at Michigan Radio, which, let's be honest, is not the best way to corner the stock market. these are not big money things we're talking about. Years ago, Steve Alford, star point guard on Indiana's basketball team under Bob Knight, was suspended for a couple games by the NCAA because he had posed for a sorority's charity calendar in a polo shirt and slacks, nothing risque about any of it, did not receive a dime, and yet he was suspended for two games for that. So trust me, there's no making any sense of these rules.
John, what about summer jobs? Let's say a soccer player who wants to be a camp counselor at their old high school with their old high school coach, or maybe a golfer working in a pro shop. Is that forbidden?
It all depends, and there's no, sadly, simple answer on that stuff, usually. But it can overlap. Sometimes they allow it, and sometimes they don't. And again, that's the problem. There's not a clear principle at play here. When Drew Henson can make $18 million playing for the New York Yankees, but, you know, the volleyball player can't make any money as a concert pianist or an intern for Michigan Radio, if there's a logic there, I'm not seeing it.
So here's a question then. What could a student athlete do to make some scratch without jeopardizing their eligibility?
Well, the real answer is nothing, because there's no time anyway. They're going to school 3 semesters a year at Michigan at most schools. You're going to school 12 months a year. You're working out 12 months a year. You've got spring football in the case of football. You got fall, you know, August football, and of course the fall football season. So the answer is you can't do anything because there's no time left. And no matter how the NCAA counts these hours, and they've got a very funny accounting system as to what counts and what doesn't. For example, team meals don't count. Travel doesn't count. So if you're going to Alaska to play a hockey game, none of that counts, according to them. But these guys rack up about 40, 45 hours a week in their sports alone. And then throw on top of that, of course, they are, in fact, full-time students. There's no time for any of it.
What do you see, John Bacon, as the unintended consequences of changes like the law in California and the bill that State Senator Ollier is working on here in Michigan?
Well, that's a great question, because even though it is impossible, as I've said, to defend these crazy rules, it's also silly to think that the changing these rules will not have some surprising side effects. For example, what happens once you allow the athletes to, I mean, let's obviously you want them to work at Michigan Radio as interns, you know, be concert pianists and so on. But once you open that door, the fear is probably correctly, because the coaches tend to be, frankly, corrupt in basketball and football, is that you'll have a local car dealership, of course, pay a player $250,000 just to make sure he attends this school or that school. And once you do that, I teach in Michigan. I've taught at Northwestern and Miami of Ohio. How I find 2 starting football players with no consequence to me, no pushback. Will there be pushback from a car dealership if they're paying that guy $250,000? I bet there will be. Will it be pushback to the coaches if they don't start that guy? So this is what you have now is bad. what you might get next could be worse.
So I don't think anyone's going to confuse you for a fan of the NCAA, but clearly, as we've heard, these rules are very onerous. What do you think is a workable fix for this, John?
My theory goes back to the roots of the whole thing, and that is, you notice in hockey and baseball, they've had viable minor leagues when those leagues started more than 100 years ago. So the colleges were attacked on, as they probably should be. Now you can get to the pro level through college baseball and college hockey, but you don't have to. And if you want to get a degree, that's how you do it. If you want to get paid and not be a student, go to the minor leagues. That is not an option in basketball and football currently, which is why the NCAA, even if they allow this, they still have a monopoly on the means of production, which is this single path to the NBA or the NHL. Until you fix that, you're always going to have problems like this.
What about sports that aren't like the big light sports, the men's basketball, men's football? What about women's sports? What about some of the other sports that don't quite get the attention that men's basketball, football get?
Well, those tend to work quite well for the simple reason that if you are a women's basketball player, yes, there's the WNBA, but it's not a career path you can probably bank on. It doesn't pay that much. So gymnasts, women's basketball players, field hockey players, softball players, they all stay in school for 4 years, they get the degree, and that's pretty much the end of their careers. So in that sense, it works quite well because there's not the temptation and the complication of the NFL and the NBA, this tug of war between college and the pros. There is no tug of war because there is no pros.
And the argument is let them make some money off of their image and likeness because they might only have this time while they're, let's say, playing basketball in college to be able to capitalize on that and make a few bucks.
Well, and that's a very easy argument. And look, all they're worried about, all the NCAA is ever worried about, is the two cash cows of football and basketball, men's basketball. And the rest end up with these crazy, silly rules they have to deal with, like the women's volleyball player who can't play the piano for a few bucks. Why? Because they're afraid of basketball coaches and getting boosters to pay their players, which, by the way, they're already doing now anyway at many schools. So the whole thing is one size fits all, and right now it fits nobody.
Michigan radio sports commentator John Eubacon. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.